So we're back. This is New Mainers Speak, and Ali Al-Mashakil has come into the studio to ask me a couple questions, turning the tables.
Thank you, Kate. First, let me say congratulations on the 100th show. And secondly, thank you for giving me the opportunity to take part in this celebration.
You're very welcome. It is my honor.
Okay, we'll start shooting the questions. And I want actually to start with the idea of the show. Why you are using the word or your name New Mainers and why speak?
Ah, well, the I was inspired to do this show, and I didn't do it alone, and we can talk later about how I built that, but I was inspired to do the show in part because of a book I read called Outcasts United by Warren St. John about Luma Mufle, who is a immigrant and worked with a whole bunch of people from all over the world in Atlanta, and that made my that made me want to put the book down and run around every time I'd read it. I was so excited about what she was doing. And it was similar to a book that was put together here in the great state of Maine by a number of people we know, Jan-Peter van Voorst van Beest and Pat Nyhan and Reza Jalali put together a book called New Mainers. And again, that book really excited me. Always my favorite kind of art is a variation on a theme. If everybody writes a poem about a flower, they're all different, but it's all about a flower. It could be the same flower. We would all have different poetry. And that's always my favorite. And so a collection of stories is somewhat like that. And that book, New Mainers, kind of coined the term. All across the country, the term is used New Americans.
Yes.
But here in Maine, it just early on got coined that people were reading that book and seeing it in shop windows. And I think it kind of caught on. There's the New Mainer Resource Center, and New Mainers are referred to frequently. And so I put a whole page of brainstormed ideas for names for the show together, you know, two columns just wedged in there. And Lisa Bunker, who's the program director, said to me, my favorite names for shows say what the show does. Some were kind of esoteric and cute. And she said, go for something as clear as possible. So New Mainers Speak.
Speak in what sense?
Have an opportunity to speak for themselves and define what their experience has been and what being an immigrant or a refugee or an asylee means to them.
Okay, if we go for more details about the show. First, how do you choose your guests? The time you spend in preparing for them?
Yeah. So how do I choose my guests? Basically, there are two criteria. You have to be born in a foreign country, a member of a different country. And then you have to now be living in Maine. That puts the New Mainers part in.
Yes. Sure.
And I'm not picky. I think everyone has a story. So it doesn't matter to me if you're a bank president or a new arrival who's working at Berber Foods. You know, everyone has a story. So the way I have traditionally gotten guests early on was lean into it. My very first guest was a friend, and it went like that, and I started meeting people. I used my resources here at WMPG. I went to Paul Manoff, who was the director of Learning Works, and he gave me a number of contacts, which I followed up. And I would just look in the newspapers and see, oh, there's someone. I think I'll call her and ask her. And that worked. And one time someone just wrote to me and said they'd like to be on the show. Yeah, that was you.
Really?
I like those self-starters.
Good, good. So what's the time invested in the show? How many hours you invest in preparing for one show, for example?
I think, you know, I've done the math on it a number of times, and it depends week to week. If it's a country I have researched before, it's less time. But in general, for real, I keep doing the math. It doesn't seem right, but it's about 7 to 10 hours a week. But if you happen to have written a book, it's going to be more. And then there's like incidental things, like I go to a lot of events and things like that. Some weeks there will be many kind of events where I end up meeting new people. But yes, I probably spend 7 to 10 hours a week. It's a lot of pieces that you don't see. I meet people beforehand at a coffee shop sometimes, or their work, or we sometimes talk on the phone. and just get to know one another so I know what it is we want to focus the conversation on. So that's a little time consuming, but
yesterday we talked about, you have some figures or numbers about the people whom you interviewed.
Yes.
Could you share this with our listeners, please?
Sure. I have visited with people from 45 countries on the air, from Azerbaijan to Zambia.
Yes.
Which I think is kind of fun. I have, you know, this is my 100th show, but some people have come on twice. So I've basically had about 90 guests, about 50 men and 40 women. Their ages range from 15 to 93. And they've been in the country for 4 months, that's you, to 68 years. That was Wim Schemmer. I've had 6 people on twice and 2 people on 3 times. And I've had one show that was run by a sub who was a student intern here at the station. And he was just wonderful and helped me get started. His name is Dan Kelly. And he did some music with Maisha.
It's very good that you are acknowledging the people who helped on the way towards the 100th show.
Oh, absolutely.
So if I want you to share also, what are the recurrent themes in your interviews?
Mm. Well, that one I get asked a lot, and I actually think about a lot because I like to look for similarities. I think the two really big ones are courage and gratitude. And I just have thousands of examples of both. Most people have both demonstrated in each interview, I think.
Mm-hmm. How?
Well, I think immigrants that I meet are very courageous to take life up on its opportunities. Not everybody I ask if they would like to come and be on the radio says yes. Not everybody wants to be on the radio, and that's really fine. But the people who come in here are up for a new experience. They're willing to speak in a foreign language, on the radio, on record, be on the web, and tell about their story, which takes a lot of courage, and even put their hopes and dreams out there, which might take even more courage than talking about the past. But people overcome terrible situations when they come to this country, sometimes before they come, sometimes after they come. And they have to keep putting themselves out there and keep trying and keep finding the life they want to live. It's inspirational to me because it's not small efforts. It's really big efforts. And what I find is it seeps into my life, and I find that I'm more willing to be courageous when something comes up that I think, oh no, I don't want to stand up there and talk about that. I think, really, I can do this. If they can come make their way in this icy climate, I can figure out how to say something to a group of people, or dance, or sing, or, you know, whatever it is that I might be a little bashful about, then I just use that little extra dose of courage. Like, if they can do it, I can do it.
Disappointments?
What about disappointments?
I mean, yesterday when we talked, you mentioned that there are some people are disappointed, and it's like some sort of a negative recurring theme. Some people thought that they would never have come to the U.S. if they knew that their process.
Yes, we were talking about the group I feel for the most is probably the refugees. The asylees. The asylees come here because they're often quite educated and powerful in their own country, and they come here and then apply for asylum. And our system is so clogged, and we don't have the infrastructure to process all the applications. People sometimes wait 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years to have their application processed, years prior to even having a hearing. So they're here, and their family is then left back in their homeland, sometimes in refugee camps, just getting sick with malaria while they're here. And they think, I would never have come if I would have known. I would have been estranged from my family. At least if I were there, I could help them in that terrible situation. I'm not helping here. And it's, people have a lot of survivor's guilt. Like, I think Parivash said that, you know, she came here and then she found out that loved ones had been executed, and she felt so guilty for being the one that got to leave. And I think that's a very common theme.
So do you think the show helped them in some way, at least to lift some of the burden over their shoulders, coming here and telling their stories?
I think so.
Do you think this helped in what sense?
I think human beings need to make meaning in their lives. there's so much loss. There's so much grief and sadness in a lifetime. You know, you have to make it all make sense. And I think telling your story, being witnessed, being understood, and realizing you did it. You know, I've had guests come on that transformed during the show. They're a little nervous, and then somewhere along the way, it just really gets rolling. And by the end, they're proud of themselves for having done what they just did, speak in English about things that are important to them.
Okay.
I'd say, you know, the other big theme is gratitude. And I have a personal spiritual belief around gratitude, and and a practice with that too. And so I learn every week more about gratitude and what that looks like. And I'm moved by my guests. So often they have a way of communicating that feels like we've lost in our culture. I feel like maybe this happened more kind of in the olden days. But at the end of an interview, for example, if I were to interview an American, they'd say, "Thanks, that was great." And that would be it. It would be real, but that would be it. But my guests, they look at me, they shake my hand and put their arm, you know, their hand on my arm as they're shaking my hand and look at me in the eyes and they say, "This experience was cathartic for me. I'm changed because I did this, and I'm so grateful that you are here and there's this place that I can tell my story." And it's a different way to express gratitude. And I kind of melt inside. It takes courage to express gratitude like that. You know, you're kind of vulnerable when you're saying how you really feel.
So do you think this is part of the goals you set for yourself, that people feeling the gratitude for being able to share their stories?
No. That's just a fallout. Mm-hmm. They bring the gratitude. I learn. You know, I've learned far more than I've taught. This is just a forum. I think of this show a little bit like having a baby. You know, the moment you have that baby and you look at it, you're instantly in love in a way you'll never be again. You know, you fall in love in that very moment. And from the moment the show was born, I loved it. I'd look at each of the guests on the website and I go, "Oh, I love that one. Oh, I love that interview. Oh, I love that." But like a baby, you don't know what it's going to grow into. You just love it. And it has continued to grow into things beyond my imagination. And it has a life of its own. I feel like I'm just the vessel. And the contents comes in and refreshes itself each week.
A vessel or a bridge?
Bridge?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a bridge. I like a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a way to get from to a place of more understanding, listening to one another and being heard.
Being a bridge, do you think you succeeded in connecting both sides, the New Mainers and the place where they are feeling welcomed, feeling accepted, feeling embraced, just by sharing their idea, their stories, that their people are listening and know what type of suffering these people suffered or endured just to reach this place?
Yes, I think so. You know, I do get some feedback on that. I get some notes on my Facebook site and my website, people commenting that these stories changed their mind. Even when I first started, I had someone who's really educated and very, very progressive say to me, "I realized I need to check my assumptions because your guest has a master's degree in economics. And when I see an African mom walking with her three little children across the road, I'm not thinking master's degree in economics." And that was right at the very beginning. That was my first show. And I thought, okay, success. We did it. I, more than anything else, hope to introduce people to their neighbors, because I live in Kennebunk and we don't have a lot of immigration happening in there. But we want our children to be exposed to the world. And so here in Portland, people can meet their neighbors who really are Iraqi or, you know, from wherever. But that doesn't happen everywhere. And so I do love the idea of introducing people to their neighbors. But I will say another little side thing that's happened with this show is I've introduced New Mainers to other New Mainers.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes people are on the show and, you know, say one young man wanted to, from Lubumbashi, Democratic Republic of Congo, said he wanted to become an ultrasonographer. It wasn't his background, but he had always wanted to do kind of medical work, and so he was thinking that's what he would do. And I said, well, you know, I have a friend from Democratic Republic of Congo who used to be a physician who's gone through that training and is now an ultrasonographer. You know, would you like to talk to him? And
excellent.
So they can talk in whatever language they want. I think they had a choice of four.
So I want to talk more about you, Kate, the person. What kind of impact did this show has on you, your life?
Well, as I mentioned, the gratitude. Frequently I hear from my guests that what they notice about America is that we have so many rich resources. And in said or unsaid, they say that we don't necessarily appreciate all the opportunity we have. And it is easy to forget. It's easy to forget when you don't realize. Like, I have a friend that was worried about me driving home in the dark. And I thought, I'm a pretty good driver. I had nothing to drink. I wasn't tired. And her friend said to me, she's not afraid of the dark. She's afraid that you'll be pulled over by cops and intimidated or worse. And I didn't know to be grateful that I could drive home at dark. It didn't even occur to me to be afraid. So I'm more grateful for the given liberties of my life when I know what that could look like without them. I think it's a little bit like we live through a terribly cold, yucky, long, cold, yucky winter.
Yes.
And then we really appreciate spring. And I feel like New Mainers speak as spring. You know, it's the spring of people's lives here. And it's I'm a spring junkie. I'm from the mid-Atlantic states where there is spring a little earlier and a little longer, a little more color, a little warmer. And I love spring and all the potential it holds.
Warm feet, you love.
I also like to have warm feet.
Okay, I must ask this question. What is your favorite interview and why?
Yours, of course.
Really?
I once met,
now that I'm here, right?
Yeah. I once met a woman who had 22 children. And of course, she said people ask her all the time if she has a favorite. And she says, the one that's sick, you know, she's spending the most time thinking about and worrying about. It is really hard to say a fave. I have had so many days when I leave here and I'm all lit up. My husband calls it my church, and I decided I must be a First Amendmentist if this is my church. I come and lean into the First Amendment of free speech. But a favorite, gosh, there's so many highlights. I could probably rattle those off. I can't.
Okay,
yeah.
So you ask every guest to choose his music.
Yes.
Or at the beginning and at the end of the show. So what's your music? What's your favorite music you want to play for the listeners?
Well, I think I've always wanted to play this on the air. When I started to become a DJ here, I came for the training. And you can too, by the way. Anyone can. It's $25. But if that's a barrier, you need to let them know. And then you can do it for free. It's 6 hours of training, three nights or days or whatever of two-hour trainings, and then you get cleared for air. And then if you want to apply for one of the slots, you can. And that's a beautiful thing that happens here on community radio. And at first I was kind of nervous because I'm not very cool. I've never liked kind of what music is considered cool. I listen to really kind of out there stuff that nobody else is going to want to listen to, I think. And so Dale Robin saw me. Dale Robin Goodman is our person who does all the fundraising around here.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw me, and we knew each other from living in Kennebunk back in the day and when she lived there. And she said, you know, there are so many different things you can do here. And I said, oh, good. What else? And she said, well, you can, we need more help with immigrants. I said, great. And that's when she and Lisa and Bunker and I sat down and we formulated the plan for this show. But I was kind of relieved I wasn't going to be a music DJ, but I always wanted to play this song. And so the song I would pick to play is by Carrie Newcomer.
Mm-hmm.
She was interviewed by Krista Tippett, who said she's the most famous Quaker rock star in America.
Okay, this will be our last thing to do, but I will ask you, my last question is, You talked about 45 countries, people coming from 45 countries you interviewed.
Yeah.
Do you think you have plans to visit these places?
Yes.
Where Mainers
systematically, I'm going to get a pass and just go. Maybe I'll walk around the world, visit all of them. I would so love to visit these countries. I do go online every time, and I often do Google Earth or Google Images for people's cities or towns or country. And I'm moved all the time by the great diversity of mm-hmm. landscapes that people come from, and the beautiful animals from around the world and temples. And I feel like that's a very rich piece of my learning every week. I would love to go to a lot of places. Prior to starting this show, I've always wanted to go to Africa. And when Mike Mwenandara, my 99th guest, was on the air, he said part of his business plan is to eventually also run some trips there. He's a coffee person. And I thought that would be pretty wonderful to get to go on one of these trips and stay in the homes of people who are raising the coffee that then comes here to Portland for people to drink. So I would love that sometime to go to Rwanda, but I've always wanted to go to India. Uh-huh. And now there's so many other countries I know little things about that I'd like to explore.
Iraq is not part of
Iraq.
The
Iraq, I would love for it to be a very peaceful place, and I can go and see all the beautiful ancient wonders that are there and the beautiful culture that exists through the wartime. But I'm not interested in going when it's so unstable.
Yes.
I don't have the war photographer gene.
I see. Thank you very much, Kate. And now we'll leave you with Kate's choice of music.
Yes, and so Carrie Newcomer sings the song Betty's Diner from the album called Betty's Diner. And she says, you never know where you're going to get, where you'll be witnessed, and that we all kind of heal one another with our presence. And I find that true. I find these interviews, I'm healed. Sometimes I feel like they're healed. How do we leave the hard past behind and create a future? I have one little quote that I had on my refrigerator, and I was just taking down because it had been there a long time, and I threw it in the recycling, and I pulled it back out because I thought that was perfect. It's a Mother Teresa quote, and she said, if we have no peace, it's because we have forgotten that we belong to each other.
Sure, the world is in need of peace.
And Paravash was talking about that too. In her religion, we are all equal, and I really believe that we're really one people. And I like how this show gets these wonderful samples. It's like Whitman samplers. They're all chocolates, but they're all different, and that's a great variety and great sameness. So this is Betty's Diner, and thank you for coming in to interview me. It's my honor.
I am honored. Thank you very much.
Yes. If you don't know, Ali used to be a CBS Baghdad news desk reporter. Is that right? Correspondent?
Yes.
For the U.S.
Local producer.
As well as UN, what was your title there?
Public Information Officer.
Yeah, Public Information Officer at the UN. So it's nice of you to come in the little WMPG today and
thank you very
do
much.
This interview.
I am honored.
Me too.
Miranda works the late night counter in a little joint called Betty's Diner. Chrome and checkered tablecloths and one steamy window pane. She got the job that shaky fall, and after hours she will ride till dawn. With a nod and smile she serves them all. Here we are all in one place, the warmth and wound of the human race, despair and hope sit face to face. When you come in from the cold, let it fill your cup with something kind. Eggs and toast like bread and wine. She's heard it all, so she don't mind. Arthur lets his Earl Grey steal.